Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download. I'm Jim Dolan, your host, and today we have three things to play for you. So it'll be an hour of old-time radio, approximately an hour. We have a Rocky Jordan. And this show reminds me a lot of Humphrey Bogart and the Casablanca. Maybe that's what was intended here. Rocky Jordan and the Song of Moses. And after that, we're going to have Tales from the Diamond K, A Skeleton in the Well. We'll follow that up with Gunsmoke and The Partners late in the series. This is from 1958. So now, Rocky Jordan.
In a narrow street off Cairo's native quarter, not far from the mosque Sultan Hassan, stands the Cafe Tambourine, clouded with the smoke of Oriental tobaccos, crowded with forgotten men from the world's waterfronts. The Cafe Tambourine. I own it. My name's Rocky Jordan.
Tonight, and every weeknight at this time, we take you to a world of excitement, intrigue, and danger in far-off Egypt. To Cairo for the transcribed adventures of an American in the Middle East, starring Jack Moyles as Rocky Jordan.
Business was good. Not only the natives, the camel drivers, the merchants, but tourists. A cafe full just off the boat and taking it all in. Seeing the local color. Natives watching tourists, tourists watching natives. And they were both enjoying themselves. It was after 11 when Bert, my head bartender, called me over to the cash register.
You're wanted in the back booth, Rock. She's a looker, she is.
I followed Bert's glance and pushed my way back through the crowd. She was sitting alone, twisting a scarf between her fingers, then sipping a vodka over ice. Red hair, green eyes, high cheekbones. I knew her.
Hello, Rocky. Sit down.
Hello, Sherita. I didn't see you come in.
I came in the back entrance. I remembered the way.
Oh? Yeah. Where you dancing now?
At the Oasis. I would rather be at a tambourine, as in the old days, Rocky. I can dance better than her.
Oh, yeah. Well, time passes, Sherita.
I see.
What's on your mind?
Have you seen Mustafa lately?
Not for about a year or so, I guess. Why?
I'm worried, Rocky. That is why I came to you. You know how much Mustafa has done for my people. How he has always tried to keep the tribal chieftains peaceful when others were stirring up trouble among them.
Well, I don't go in for politics, Sherita. But I know Mustafa saved my life once, and that's good enough for me.
He has always regarded you as a son, Rocky.
What's the matter? Is he in trouble?
There has been much unrest lately. Mustafa has established secret headquarters to avoid an outbreak. He has left Cairo.
Well, that's not unusual for him.
But tonight, earlier, while I was dancing at the Oasis Club, I saw a man named Arubin at one of the tables. You know him?
I know his name. I've never run into him.
I hope you never do. He's evil, like a snake. I was startled to see him here in Cairo. He's wanted by the police.
So, a character named Harubin's in town. What makes you think he's after Mustafa?
Around the Oasis, they are saying death to Mustafa. Harubin is here for that. He is the assassin. Rocky, someone must find our leader, must warn him.
What about the police?
You know they will not act. There is politics at police headquarters as elsewhere. Would they take sides in a tribal war? You know they will not.
Well, I'm sorry, Sherita. I'm afraid tribal wars are a little out of my line, too.
Rocky, there's no one else I can turn to. I would go myself if I knew where to look. You have the contacts. You are trusted. You can find Mustafa and warn him in time. The leader of my people once saved your life. Can you be unwilling to save his?
All right, Sherita. All right. I'll see what I can do. She left, the tall, willowy body disappearing through the crowd, and I was left with her story and her check. But the memory of Mustafa hung on, an old man who held a kind of religious power over his people, but like most leaders, was constantly being challenged for control. I left the tambourine and headed for a bazaar in the native quarter. One of Mustafa's contacts owned a rug shop there. Maybe he could get word to his leader. Then across the street and paralleling me, I spotted a native in a burnoose. I slowed down, so did he. I speeded up. He followed suit. I reached a corner, then I saw another guy across the street starting toward me. I turned right, and a third one appeared down the street ahead of me. I stopped, and suddenly an English sedan turned the corner and pulled up beside me.
Good evening, Mr. Jordan. Won't you get in?
I don't need to be invited twice. Thanks.
You seem to be in something of a hurry.
Ah, I was.
Oh, but excuse me, we have not met. My name is Harubin.
So I was steered to your car.
Yes, I called at your Cafe Tambourine to see you a few moments ago. I was told you had left, so I followed. I wanted to be sure we had our little talk.
Yeah.
Mr. Jordan, I have a business proposition for you.
What kind of business, Harubin?
A stupid native dancing girl has come to you with an absurd warning. Something about my trying to kill a man. Well, it is nonsense.
Oh?
Of course. With this girl and I, we had dinner together last evening in a private dining room. You understand what I mean, of course.
I don't like that kind of humor.
I will forget that for the moment. Stop the car. Jordan, if you make one move outside the Cafe Tambourine in the next 48 hours, you will be shot dead on the street. Do you understand that?
Sherita was right then.
It is not your affair. Do not let sentimentality cause your untimely passing. Now we will drive to a place of soft moonlight in the desert where my assistants will teach you to respect your elders. I do not want to soil my hands with your blood. Now, drive quickly.
What is that? Some friends of yours, Harubin. The police. Drive out quickly. See you later. I jumped clear as the car jerked forward, and suddenly a jeep roared up at us fast. A police jeep. Harubin fired back at them, then his sedan was gone. The cops returned the fire, and I was in the middle of it. I dove into an alley. Too late. A slug creased my leg. I made it to a door, and crawled inside. The gun battle moved up the dark street and away. Now I knew I had to get to Mustafa. And soon. I waited a few minutes, then edged out onto the street. Hugging the shadows, I made my way back to the tambourine. Bert was waiting for me in the hall outside my office.
Groggy.
I am kind of groggy, Bert. Help me into my office, will you?
Groggy. The police are in there. Captain Zabaya.
Sam?
Good evening, Jordan. Come in, please.
Captain Sam Sabaya, Cairo Police Force. A smart, tough cop, and the last guy in the world I wanted to see right now. I stood suddenly straight and walked into my office as though I was about to begin a new day with push-ups. As I sat down, my left arm covered the hole in my trousers.
Are you all right, Jordan?
Sure, Sam. Just make yourself at home.
I have been.
What's on your mind?
You.
Oh?
Where were you this evening?
Here at the tambourine till about 9:30.
That's right, Captain.
And at 9:30, Jordan?
I told Bert to take over, and I went over to the bazaar to look for a gift for a friend. Now, what's the beef, Sam?
Do you know a man named Harubin?
Mm-hmm. Heard of him.
As you perhaps are aware, he is a wanted man. We have been on his trail for some time. Tonight, some of my men under Sergeant Greco almost caught him.
Almost? Greco goofed again, huh?
Jordan, the fact that you and Sergeant Greco do not like each other is not at issue. As my officers closed in on Harubin, they saw a man jump from his car. Harubin got away, and so did the other man.
Well, it's too bad, Sam, but I don't see what it's got to do with me.
Greco is sure he shot that other man. Furthermore, he got a brief glimpse of him in the alley, and he's almost positive it was you, Jordan.
Me? Sam, you sure got a weird sense of humor.
You know me better than to think this is a joke. Any associate of Herr Rubens must be regarded as his accomplice. If the man with him tonight was you...
Oh, get smart, Sam. If I were the guy and Greco shot me, do you think I'd be sitting here talking to you right now?
It does not seem likely, I must admit.
Look, Sergeant Greco can imagine he sees me everywhere. He spends half his time trying to find...
Jordan!
Greco's got it in for me, and you know it, Sam. Why else would he come to you with a cock and bull story like this? What would I want with a man like Herr Rubin? Now, if you don't mind, Bert and I have some paperwork to do.
Very well, Jordan. I sincerely hope you are not involved. But if you are...
Yeah. See you later, Sam.
Indeed you will, Jordan. Good night.
Rocky.
Shh.
Yeah. He's gone, Rocky.
Oh, Bert, I think I better... Look! Give me some brandy, huh?
Rocky, you've got to stay out of this.
I can't. I owe a man something. My life. Thanks, Bert. Now give me a hand out to my car, huh?
Sure, Rock. Rocky, it's none of my business, but don't you think it might be better to tell the police?
Well, I wanted to tell Sam, but Herr Rubin is a shoot-on-sight character to the cops. Anybody they tie in with him has a lot of explaining to do.
Yeah, that's true.
Sure, I could clear myself, but it'd take time. Time is one thing I don't have right now. I've got to locate Mustafa, and I can't wait for red tape.
Can you make it all right?
Oh, sure. And you start her up. After the doctor patches me up... Oh, great.
You do not seem to be walking so well, Jordan.
Hello, Sam.
In your office, I noticed your tan had faded. Loss of blood sometimes has that effect.
You got sharp eyes, Grandma. Look, Sam, so I was with Herr Rubin. I can explain.
I will be most interested in your explanation.
But there's something I have to take care of first.
First, we will go to police headquarters.
This is important, Sam. Trust me. A friend of mine's in danger. Look, you know me well enough to...
Jordan, where it is a matter of duty, I do not know you at all. We will help your friend after a visit to headquarters.
Okay, Sam. We'll do it your way.
You want me to come with you, Rocky?
Oh, you stay close to the tambourine, Bert.
Yes, sir.
Move over, Jordan. I will drive.
Sorry to do this, Sam, but you stay here!
Jordan, don't be a fool! Come back, Jordan!
I turned the corner and stepped on the accelerator. Mustafa was going to take a lot of finding, but I had to do it before Herr Rubin did. It was going to be between us. And it was one race I didn't want to end in a dead heat.
Rocky Jordan. Listen Monday through Friday at this time as we take you to a world of excitement, intrigue, and danger in far-off Egypt. To Cairo for the transcribed adventures of an American in the Middle East, starring Jack Moyles as Rocky Jordan. Rocky Jordan is produced in Hollywood. This is the CBS Radio Network.
Hello there, buckaroos. This is Ken Maynard at the Diamond K. And that was Tarzan joining me and saying, welcome to the tack room. You know, cowpokes, as a general rule, are quite easygoing. They take things as they come. And living close to nature as they do, they know there's not much they can do about some things, except to make the best of them. Which is a pretty good rule to follow. I suppose luck has something to do with the way things turn out for us, but some of us make our own luck, good or bad. I remember one time down in Texas, an old-timer had been digging down there for a long time for some lost gold. He'd practically dug his own grave. But one day, a shabby old Mexican came walking by, and he stood off for a while, keeping his distance, watching the old-timer dig. Finally, he spoke. "Senor," he called, "is this what you're looking for?" "Wait a minute," said the old-timer. "Come on over, take a look." "Crying out loud, where'd you get this?" Why, right here, said the Mexican. I picked it up here, out of this old saddlebag. But before he could reach down again, the old-timer brushed him aside to grab for himself. But all he found was a nest of tumblebugs, and he started hopping around complaining like everything. But that didn't bother the Mexican any. Guess it wasn't intended for you, said, nor for me either. And he shuffled off without even asking for the return of the gold piece he'd found. Yes, they say one man's gold is another man's poison. There's a heap of truth in it, as you'll find out when I tell you about the skeleton in the well.
From the tack room of Ken Maynard's Diamond K Ranch, we're bringing you stories of adventure, stories of circus life, fascinating transcribed tales of the Old West where cowboys still follow the cattle trails, stories of rodeos and parades, colorful legends of the red man, hidden gold and buried treasure. The exciting tales from the Diamond K are told by Hollywood's champion of Western stars, internationally famous Ken Maynard. Now, while Ken's getting ready to spin his newest Wild West yarn for you, here's something for you buckaroos to think about. Remember I told you what every cowboy's favorite pastime is? Well, after the chores are done, whether it's watering the horses or pitching hay or rounding up the cattle, the boys just kind of drift together to chat a bit, and the first thing you know, one of them's telling us stories. Why, cowboys just love a good story, and that's why we think you'll get a big kick out of having a set of real Western stories to hear any time you have your chores done. I'm talking about the record album of Ken Maynard Wild West Stories. It's a beautiful album, all in color, with two of Ken's favorite stories inside on two big 8-inch unbreakable records, with pictures of Ken and Tarzan right on the records. And best of all, these records are personalized, made for you with a personal message from Ken to you right on the record. When you put the needle down on the record, you'll hear Ken say,
"Hello there, Jimmy. This is Ken Maynard with a story just for you."
Yes, Ken will call you by name, whatever your name is, and he'll tell you two complete, exciting stories. Why, you'll be the talk of your neighborhood, buckaroos. And do you know how you can get this Diamond K record album? Just send your name and address with a dollar to Records in care of this station. The records are standard 78 RPM speed for the regular kind of record player that everybody's been using for years. And say, you'll play your records over and over again. Now, here's Ken.
Well, buckaroos, tighten your belts around that K-shirt of mine that I hope you're wearing. Let's get on with the story. Back at time, I don't remember how many years, one of the mines was shipping a load of silver. You know, we get to talking so much about gold, we're apt to forget at times that silver is worth quite a bit, too, especially when it comes in the quantity we're talking about at the moment. There were 6 burloads of the stuff in the shipment, enough to attract more bandits than buzzards to a dead carcass. The bandits made short work of guards and were going for cover when the rangers began to catch up with them. The armors were driving those burros for all they were worth. Bags of silver bouncing around like crazy as if to spill all over the desert. Well, the bandits saw they could never get away the way things were, so they dumped the whole load, mules and all, down a deep well. Of course, buckaroos, you can imagine what that fall, with all that weight, did to those burros. They were really quiet when the rangers passed by. Now, one of those rangers became a smart businessman, either intentionally or unintentionally. Anyway, he helped to buy up the land on which the well was located. Now, I don't know how many years it was before this fellow got around to giving that well the attention it deserved. It could be he was biding his time, waiting until everyone had forgotten the incident, if anybody had ever heard of it. Anyway, 6 burros with their legs buckling under a load of silver have got to go somewhere. And even out in the open, there are just so many places where they can go. But don't get me wrong, buckaroos. It could be that the whole thing was just a happenstance, and what resulted can be classified as luck, either way you want to put it. So it was that this ex-ranger fella finally got around to giving that well the attention it deserved. Well, folks, you'll just have to excuse me from my story for a minute, because I want to sit back and get comfortable. Speaking of comfort, you know, if a man doesn't feel comfortable, he just can't do his best at work or play. And just for your information, I feel my best when I'm dressed comfortably. You know, my favorite outfit, whether I'm working or just loafing around, is my K-shirt and a pair of jeans. And you'd be surprised how many buckaroos are agreeing with me. Kids all over the country are writing in asking me for a K-shirt like mine. I've told you about it before. It's a comfortable cotton shirt made like a T-shirt in the color of desert sand, with my own Diamond K brand in bright red on the front, and Tarzan and me looking right at you. If you want to join the fellows and girls that are wearing my own private K-shirt, all you got to do is send me your name and address. Tell me what sizes you wear, sizes 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, or 12, and enclose a $1 bill for the fellow that makes them. Pretty fancy shirt for just a dollar. You'll get a lot of wear out of your K-shirt, too, because it's fine quality cotton, and the blazing colors are put on by the special hand screen process. So send today. Be sure to send your name, your address, and your size to K-Shirt, care of this station, and slip in that little old $1 bill. Your shirt will be sent to you, postage prepaid, from Hollywood. Now back to the story. We're just about to do some investigating of a well that had been involved in some rather strange doings. Well, this ex-ranger fellow got a bunch of Mexicans and set them to clean out the well. Of course, you know, folks, when wells dry up, they begin to fill up with dirt and such. And during the years, it can pile up mighty high. So these Mexicans were digging and digging away, hauling the dirt away in buckets, and it was mighty slow work. Too slow for a man who was paying them. Well, they'd been digging for a long time, and they were raising a huge pile of dirt near the top of that well. When one day, and it really was a hot one, one of the Mexicans who was digging at the bottom let out an unearthly yell, and he bounded out of that well so fast you'd have thought he'd been shot from a cannon. Well, of course, word got to the ranger, and he lost no time getting down there. The Mexicans were crossing themselves and shaking their heads and pointing to the mouth of the well. And eventually the boss man got out of them that the diggers had come across some bones. Of what species, he didn't say. The ex-ranger didn't seem to be surprised. In fact, those who were there swear he looked a bit pleased. Anyway, it didn't take long to get out in that well. When he came up, he was really smiling. Said there was a lot of digging to be done yet. And was even willing to double the wages of the diggers if they'd get back on the job. Which they did, crossing themselves and mumbling, Madre mia. You couldn't drag that ranger away from that hole after that. He camped there all night, not only to guard the diggings, but to keep the Mexicans from running away. Guess that extra pay didn't seem quite as important when the sun went down. Well, it was slow work, because the hole, getting as deep as that was, made it take longer to haul the buckets to the top. And the ranger went through every bucket with a fine-tooth comb, getting more impatient all the time. He insisted upon searching the clothing of the diggers every time they came up for a mite of fresh air and to get some of the dust out of their lungs. Finally, the ranger couldn't wait any longer. He made all the Mexicans get out of the well and start digging himself, acting almost like a crazy man, screaming and yelling at the Mexicans to get out of the well, empty them and get down faster and faster. Then the Mexicans heard him cry out, and strange sounds like laughing and talking. Well, they just lit out like so many jackrabbits, leaving their boss man down the well. But it didn't seem to bother him any. He was having a good time of it, laughing, talking to himself, and fondling the silver bars. His pick had at last uncovered them. Yes, buckaroos, I'd say he was enjoying himself a lot, figuring to himself just how many bars of silver would be in that load of 6 jacks, and laughing like a madman, digging and digging for more bars, brushing the dirt away, cursing whenever he uncovered bones instead of silver, and then a strange thing happened. One of those bones started to grow and grow until it was a skeleton, a human skeleton, as tall as he was. And they stood there in the well, toe-to-toe, staring at each other. And the skeleton kept growing and growing, higher and higher, until it was all 40 feet tall. And the ex-ranger was so scared, all he could do was stand and shake. He tried to cry out, but he had no voice. And his hands and arms, his whole body went numb. And all the while, the skeleton was growing and growing. And then the ranger began to get his voice back, weak at first, but then he began to yell for the Mexicans to haul him up, but they were gone, and there was no one at the top of the well. He began to yank frantically at the rope, but all he did was to pull the loose rope down to him. He thought he would go insane as he kept yelling and yanking at the rope, and all the time the skeleton was growing taller and taller. Well, buckaroos, there's no telling what would have happened in the end if that rope hadn't been attached to the spindle they used in hauling up the buckets. The ranger would have been trapped down there forever. He saw then that his only way out was to climb up that skeleton. Well, breathing heavily, he climbed up that rope and out of the well and fell panting on the ground. He was so weak and frightened, all he could do was lie there. And that's where they found him later. He couldn't ride, so they draped him over a horse and hauled him home, where he died. Funny thing, but do you know no one ever expressed any interest in the silver after that? Yes, sir, buckaroos. One man's silver can be another man's poison, and maybe that old Mexican I was telling you about showed good sense in saying, what's not intended for you, you shouldn't bother about.
Well, Ken,
That was a very unusual and interesting story. And you know, when you finish a story like that, I just keep wishing there was more, because I really go for a good Western story. And I'll bet you young buckaroos listening feel a lot like I do. You never get enough of hearing good stories. And that's why I think if you haven't already ordered your Diamond K record album of exciting Ken Maynard stories, you're losing time. You could be enjoying them. You know, this beautiful colored album contains two complete, big, 8-inch, pure vinylite, absolutely unbreakable records of regular 78 RPM standard speed. And don't forget, they're made just for you with a personal message from Ken Maynard, Hollywood's champion of Western stars. Wait till you hear Ken call you by name. He'll say,
"Hello, George. This is Ken Maynard with a story just for you."
Yes, sir. Ken will call you by name no matter what your name is, right on the record. That's how they're personalized for you. It's the biggest value I know of for just a dollar. Two records in an album. Two complete Wild West stories. Pictures of Ken and Tarzan inside and out. And a very interesting story about Ken on the back, too. All this for just a dollar. So send your name and address and a dollar bill to Records in care of this station. Your album will be mailed postage prepaid right from Hollywood. But be sure your name is in the letter, your first name, so Ken can say hello to you. Don't wait any longer to get in on all this fun. Now here's Ken to tell you about his next exciting story.
Well, buckaroos, I hope you enjoyed this story. Sorry I can't tell you what happened to that 40-foot spook. I suppose that's what folks would call a tall story. Anyway, there are those who will vouch for it. Be that as it may, there's quite a lesson in it if you'll only profit by it. Now, until next time, this is your old saddle pal, Ken Maynard and Tarzan, saying so long.
You've been listening to Tales from the Diamond K, stories of adventure told by Ken Maynard, internationally famous cowboy, stunt rider, and Hollywood's champion of Western stars. Now, we hope that you're one of the regular visitors to Ken's Tack Room. You know, the door is always open at the Diamond K Ranch every weekday. So invite your friends to come along for a trip into the adventures of the wild, wild west. And we bet Mom and Dad will enjoy these stories, too. Ken Maynard, you know, is a real riding, roping, shooting cowboy who's traveled all over the world looking for excitement and lost treasure, starring in circuses and rodeos as well as his own motion pictures. And he's just chock full of rootin' tootin' stories. Ken will be looking for you. Tales from the Diamond K was produced and transcribed in Hollywood.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Homicide Division, Inspector Nichols speaking. Who? Ralph Dean. The guy that backs all those nightclubs with his dough? Where? Right, I'll be there in 10 minutes. So you two are Thomas and Gerald Klein.
That's right, Inspector. We're brothers.
Where's the body?
That's right, fellas. The coroner'd like to make his examination as soon as possible.
It's in this next room.
You see, we're both bachelors, and we have our living quarters here above the nightclub.
Right in here, Inspector.
Not much of a mess. Mustn't have been a struggle.
There wouldn't be much blood in a death like this. Death was too instantaneous.
As we said, Inspector, Dean came to Thomas and me and asked if he could come up here to talk over a business deal with this Johnson fellow. Dean had put up the money for his club, too, but Johnson wasn't cutting in with enough dough.
Was Dean financing your club, too?
Why, yes.
But to get back to the story, Inspector, Dean and Johnson came up here to this room. After about half an hour, Thomas and I heard two shots. We happened to be in the kitchen just below here.
We ran right up, but Johnson had beat it.
But not before he stopped to plant my necktie in Dean's hand to frame us, make it look like I killed Dean.
How about that necktie in the victim's hand, coroner?
It looked as though Dean ripped it off the neck of his killer.
See? Johnson's a smart operator. He knew it would look that way.
Can you remove the tie from his hand, coroner?
Yes, if you want me to break his hand. It's a case of cadaveric spasm, Inspector. Dean has a death clutch on it, and the only way you'll remove it is by breaking the hand.
Johnson must have gone up into our wardrobe, grabbed one of Gerald's ties and torn it, then put it into Dean's hand and forced the fingers around it.
Yeah, Johnson was jealous of our business and was double-crossing Dean, so he thought this would be a way to kill two birds with one stone.
He killed Dean and planted suspicion on us.
You might as well store your alibi, boys. Johnson had nothing to do with this. Gerald, you fired the fatal shots as your brother Thomas stood by and watched. I'm arresting both of you for Dean's murder.
Do you know what evidence proves Gerald pulled the trigger? In 1 minute, we'll be back with the solution. But first... to the inspector and his explanation.
Johnson couldn't have planted that necktie, Gerald. That tie of yours in Dean's hand is the clue proving your guilt. As you walked close to him and shot, he grabbed at you, caught hold of your tie, and in falling tore the tie off. When a person dies suddenly, as did Dean, they often clutch tenaciously as to whatever happens to be in their hands. Their fingers are set in an unmovable grasp. In that case, it's a medical impossibility for anyone to place something in the victim's hand and cause that dead hand to grasp it as tightly as Dean has your tie. That clue in Dean's hand is going to be worth two killers in the electric chair.
Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gun Smoke, starring William Conrad. Story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely.
Hey, looky there, Sam. The big fella's about to start the show now.
Yeah. Hello, everybody. I heard you Dodge City folks were up and coming, ready to pay the price for a real thrilling spectacle. Well, this is it. A feat of daring the like of which ain't been seen since the days of William Tell.
Oh, he's a pretty funny talker, ain't he?
Uh-huh. Now put your money in the hat or there won't be any show.
Well, come on, Sam.
Come on. Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you very much.
Hey, is that your little boy, Mr. Tell?
What? You want to find out, mister?
Here now.
My partner, mister, Little Murray. He may be small, but he ain't no boy, as you just found out. Now, I'll advise you to put some money in that.
Well, sure.
Sure, I'll put you.
You gonna shoot that tin can off in the little fella's head?
I shoot one off in his head, he shoots one off in mine. If you put in your money.
Oh, well, sure. Here's mine.
Now, gentlemen, stand back. Out of the way. That's it. That's it. Thank you. Now, I place this small can on my head. Please do nothing to distract my partner. This is a serious moment.
You ain't joking, mister.
Now, please, please. Here, now, make no sound as he counts.
Yes, go on.
One, two, three.
Now he'll place the can on his head and...
All right, hold it up a minute there.
Well, what's the trouble, Marshal?
That's a law about firing guns in the street here, mister.
But, Marshal, this is an exhibition, a theatrical performance. You might say it's even educational.
I don't care what you call it. There's lead flying, and it can kill somebody. One of you, even.
Well, that's what makes a performance, Marshal.
That's what they pay to see.
You're risking a lot for that little hat full of money.
We trust each other's marksmanship, Marshal.
Nobody's that good every time.
We're gamblers, Marshal.
Well, you won this time. Go ahead and split the pot.
But we haven't finished here.
All right, everybody, the show's over. Move along.
You won't let us go on?
No.
And suppose we move outside town. No laws then against little target practice, is there?
No. But this kind of target practice, if you miss, you'll face a murder charge.
Oh, I told you, we're gamblers, Marshal. We're going to set up a game here. Any objections?
Not if your game is honest. What's your name, anyway?
Grover, Cranston P., at your service. And this is my partner, Little Maury. I hardly remember his last name, but I think it's Smith.
Yeah, I'll bet, like yours, is Grover.
Now, that ain't too friendly of you, Marshal.
I'm not paid to be friendly, mister.
Well, now, gentlemen, let's remove ourselves from the marshal's jurisdiction and finish the spot.
Oh, my, that choke cherry pie is good.
Want another piece, Chester?
I don't know, Miss Kitty. How about you, Mr. Dillon?
No, not for me, Chester.
Doc?
No, not me, but you go on. Oh, yes, Chester, you have another. It's just the thing for you.
No, I reckon I better not, Miss Kitty.
Oh, don't let him scare you, Chester. I'll go out to the kitchen and get it for you myself.
Sure, she'll get it for you, Chester. And I'll start figuring what to charge to cure you.
Oh, now, Doc.
No, I mean it. I mean it, Chester. Another inch around the middle and you're going to have trouble, boy. I noticed yesterday how short of breath you were just walking out to the town limits. Well, let the cat out of the bag. Oh, Matt, now, you knew about those two putting on their William Tell act again yesterday, didn't you? That's the first time in 2 weeks.
Yeah, sure, Doc. I just didn't know that you and Chester were there, that's all.
Mr. Dillon, I figured maybe somebody ought to make sure they're really over the line.
Uh-huh. I hope you had a good first-row seat, Chester.
Yes, sir.
How about you, Doc? Were you able to see all right?
Well, I thought that there might be a chance of my professional services that they might be needed.
Sure. That's exactly what brought a couple of hundred others out there. It's too bad they disappointed you.
Here you are, Chester.
Thank you, Miss Kitty.
What I can't figure out is... Why, they stay in that crummy boarding house where you steered them, Chester.
Oh, now, Doc, Miss Gans runs a real nice place. What I mean is, well, it's real nice.
Yeah, what you mean is the boarding house is bad and the food is worse. But the widow Gans is young and pretty.
Would you please put the sugar in there?
Yeah, Maury.
Well, you was watching our poker game last night. You have to do that?
Well, I keep an eye on every game in town.
You had any complaints about ours?
If I had, you'd be in jail.
We don't have to cheat.
I hear you made quite a pile in the last couple of weeks.
We've done all right.
Yeah, but you're greedy. You put on your act again yesterday, didn't you?
And it was outside of town.
You know, you'll go on till one of you is dead.
I'll tell Grover what you said when I find him, Marshal.
I saw him about an hour ago over on Bridge Street with Effie Gans.
Effie Gans?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Did I say something wrong?
I don't know, Kitty.
Well, you did seem a little sore about something.
You know, Grover was sweet-talking Effie Gans. She's a widow. You figure those fellas might be pulling some game on her?
Oh, I doubt it, Kitty. She's not rich enough.
More likely to be the other way around, if you ask me.
Oh, now, Doc, she's real nice.
Oh, sure, and she's real pretty, too. But so's a rattlesnake, if you want to look at it that way.
The shoveling started at the little town of Rome in New York State back in 1817. And on July 4th, 1967, the post office released a special sesquicentennial stamp there in honor of the big ditch they dug, which, it says on the stamp in my album here, was the Erie Canal. Now, in case you don't know, that canal went all the way from Buffalo on Lake Erie to the Hudson River, connecting the Great Lakes with the Atlantic Ocean. The biggest waterway ever built in the United States at the time, and it was done mostly by the Irish just over from the old country, who did their digging with spit and mussel. Yep. Made lots of money for years on tolls. And the traffic and freight and people through the canal was mainly responsible for building up the Midwest and keeping business in the East busy doing it. Well, of course, the Erie Canal ain't what she used to be, because the railroads do most of the job now. But the big ditch is still there, and so is all the history that went through it.
Hey, Grover.
Oh, hello, Maury. I was just going down to open up the game. You coming?
I've been looking for you. Where you been all morning?
Why, around town.
Who with?
What do you mean, who with? Lots of people. And everybody wants to see the act again. I think we ought to put it on this afternoon. Crowd gets bigger every time.
You know why they keep coming back to see it?
Sure. I hope someday we'll miss.
And someday we will. Grover, let's get out of this town.
Why, we're doing fine.
I don't like it. And we got enough now, more than we ever had before. Let's go somewhere else and start a real business. What about it?
Well, we'll talk about it tonight, huh? One more William Tell act this afternoon, maybe we'll have enough. Just one more, huh? See you down at the place.
Yeah, I'll be long. I'm just going to wash up.
Okay.
Honey,
oh. Grover's already gone, Miss Gans.
Oh. Oh, what are you staring at?
You, Miss Gans. You in love with Grover?
Why now, I never. Whatever gave you that idea?
He did.
He didn't...
No. But I know him pretty well, Miss Gans.
Well, you're wrong. Now, I don't say I don't like him. But then, I like you too, Maury.
You mean that, Miss Gans?
Why, sure.
Most women don't like little men like me, Mrs. Gans. Could you find it in yourself to love me?
Well... I don't know.
If there wasn't no Grover, if there was only one of us, could you find it in yourself to leave here, go away, and get married?
Now, where'd you get such an idea as that? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't like such talk.
You better like it, Miss Gans. You better.
Thank you. afternoon, Doc.
Say, have you heard the talk? There's going to be another of those William Tell acts late this afternoon.
Well, I can't stop it, Doc.
Well, there's something else I heard, too. Mr. Bodkin, down at the bank, says the widow Gans is leaving town. Sold her house for cash. And she might have some more saved up somewhere.
What are you saying, Doc?
Well, those two might be fleecing her, Matt.
You said it'd be more like the other way around. A rattlesnake can be pretty if you see it that way.
Oh, no, Matt.
All right, if you want me to talk to her, Doc, ask her if she's being fleeced, you think she'll thank me for it?
Yeah, more likely she'll slap your face.
Yeah, but I might find out something. I think I'll try it. Hello, Miss Gans.
What do you want, Marshal?
I'll just talk to you for a minute.
Well, I'm listening.
I heard you sold your house.
They had lots of big mouths in this town.
I see you got your bag in there. You planning to leave town?
I don't see it's any of your business, Marshal.
Oh, I just thought it might be, Miss Gans.
Why?
Well, you know how it is. A widow with a little money is fair game. Especially if she's pretty.
What are you driving at, Marshal?
You've been seen around with this man, Grover. He just might be planning to leave town with him.
Now, you listen to me, Marshal. I'm a widow, yes, but I don't have to like it. It don't have to mean my life is finished now, does it?
No, ma'am, of course not.
All right, then. If a man loves me and wants me to love him, it's no business of yours.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Gans.
All right. Maybe you meant well, but I don't thank you. What I do is my own business, even if I lose everything. Now, you get out.
Hometowns in America have a lot in common, and yet they're each one of a kind. Take, for example, Palm Springs, California. The chief industries of Palm Springs are fun and sun. After that, there aren't any more. There are more privately owned swimming pools per capita in the village than in any other city in the world. But don't get the idea that it's all resort and nothing but funning and sunning and swimming. The school system in Palm Springs is one of the best. With Nellie Kaufman Junior High, Palm Springs High, and the new junior college out at Palm Desert. The annual police benefit has moved indoors, and the Desert Sun and KPAL still keep folks pretty well informed and entertained. Meanwhile, things are still busy at the Youth Center on Bilardo Road across from O'Donnell Golf Course. But if your hometown is Palm Springs, you already know this. We only wanted to remind you, it's still there.
After all, huh, Marshal?
That's right, Grover.
Can you see good from there, Marshal?
Yeah, I can see. Go ahead.
All right. All right, Maury. You let me go first today.
No, I'll go first.
What's the matter? You nervous because of the law?
I'm not nervous. Are you?
Oh, of course not.
Don't worry. I'll put the bullet exactly where I want it.
Well, go ahead, then. Walk on out about 10 paces, Maury. Now, gentlemen, your attention. Please remain quiet. No movement. No loud noise. While my partner counts. Quiet, please.
One, two,
Is he dead?
With a bullet through the forehead? Yeah, he's dead, Murray.
Oh, poor Grover. Well, this is terrible. Terrible.
I'm arresting you for murder, Murray.
What? No, it was an accident. Everybody here saw it was an accident. You said yourself it could have happened any time.
And I said if it did, you'd stand trial for murder.
Now, look, Marshal. Do you really think any jury would convict me with all these witnesses here to testify for me?
No. No, I don't.
Well, then, are you going to lock me up? Or will you let me take the body of my partner and bury him?
All right, go ahead.
Mr. Dillon, I swear I don't understand you. Of course it was an accident. We all seen it.
Chester, why do you think I wanted to be there this time?
Well, I don't know.
I expected there might be an accident.
You did?
Yeah. I didn't figure it this way.
Where are we going?
To the Widow Gans. I want to be there when little Maury shows up.
Place looks deserted except for that one light in the front room there.
Well, let's get a little closer.
That's her in the front room. Got a suitcase packed, too.
Shh. There's somebody coming.
Little Maury.
Honey, is that you? Did it go all right? Is he dead? It took so long, I was worried. Well, come on in. Don't stand out there. I got the money all here and... Maury.
That's right, Miss Gans. It's me, Maury. I had the first shot and I figured what you two was planning, so I just changed the plan a little.
Oh, no.
Grover's dead, all right. But that don't matter. We'll go instead. You and me with all that money. And there's more here from the act this afternoon. Oh, this one was a real killing.
No. No, don't you touch me.
You said you might could love me. Well, you will. Now, come on.
No. No!
All right, that's enough, Maury.
Marshal, you heard what he did.
And I heard what you were planning to do, too, Miss Gans. Turned out to be my business after all, didn't it?
Oh, no. No. You wouldn't.
Yes, I would.
She's coming with me, Marshal.
Oh, no!
Let go of her, Maury.
You can't stop us, Marshal. You know how I can shoot. You've seen me.
Don't try me, Maury, even with a woman to shield you.
Why not?
Chester.
Right here, Mr. Dillon. I can hit him easy.
Now, you drop your gun, Maury.
You call that fair?
This is no game, mister. Now, drop it! All right. Come on. Both of you.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Featured in the cast were Parley Bear as Chester, Howard McNear as Doc, and Georgia Ellis as Kitty. George Walsh speaking. Join us again next week for another specially transcribed story on Gunsmoke. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.